Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love, sponsored by the Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, that nothing is possible with love on your side. I am TJ Jackson, and with me I have, of course, both of my brothers, Taj and Terrell Jackson. How are you guys?
How's it going?
We're good.
Sounds good, the mic.
Sounds good, right?
Sounds a little better.
Yeah. Well, right. First of all, happy birthday, Terrell. Hey,
thank you, TJ.
How you feel? Do you feel any wiser, any older?
TJ wants to know what it's like.
No, it's not too bad.
It's not too bad, right?
No, it's not too bad.
43
I think once you get to a certain age, it just doesn't even matter.
Are you doing anything for your birthday? Age.
I'm just hanging with the boys. I might go to the driving range later.
You're into golf all of a sudden.
I am.
Good for you.
It's fun. It's relaxing.
Good.
I need that.
It's great. We are live on the Power of Love. If you're listening to us right now, thanks for joining us. Later on in our show, we will open up phone lines in case you have a question for our guest. The phone number is 323-203-0815. Again, it's 323-203-0815. And if you're too shy to call or you just feel like tweeting instead, I guess you have a computer, no phone, right? But Todd, you can call on computers now. But anyways, if you rather tweet, you could do so at DDJ Foundation. Again, it's at the letters DDJ, the word foundation. For our disclaimer, we are not licensed therapists. We're just ordinary people who have experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it, and we've learned from it. And we want to share our opinions in an attempt to help you overcome whatever it is you're going through. Saying that, if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and to find it. Please don't just rely on us. So, today's date is August 8th.
Yeah.
Finally,
such a great day.
The day of the show falls. Such a great day. Falls on one of our birthdays. Terrell, you were the first one. Mm-hmm. How does it feel to be doing a radio show on
it's
your
great.
Birthday?
Yeah. I'm happy to be here.
You don't have anything for our listeners to on your special day that you want to say?
I'm happy to be alive. I'm happy to be here, man.
You're
great. I'm happy.
Okay, good.
I think the older you get, you just you appreciate life more and more.
Yeah.
And just you realize it's the simple things, and you just strive to be happy, find your happiness, your bliss, and stay in that zone.
Well done. Talking about staying in the zone, Taj, did you get out of your house today?
Today, yes.
He's here.
Well, besides here.
Yeah, I had to go to the doctor for doctor's appointment for Tiana.
And how are we looking?
Great. Looking great. Everything's looking great.
Good.
We were filming yesterday because we went yesterday too and filming the baby. And as soon as I put my camera down, the baby yawned and I was so angry because it was such a cute picture, but I missed it.
So the actress did her job.
Oh,
the
100%.
Director and the
she's camera shy.
You didn't
though.
Capture the moment.
Yeah, no.
You missed it.
And of course, Tiana's like, "Did you get that?" And I'm like, had a nod and be like, "No, I missed it."
Taj, how's it feel? Your first child, and how's that experience for you?
You know, I've been sitting back watching you guys, and so for me, I've kind of vicariously understood everything. But it's it's different when it's you, and I'm super excited. I'm trying not to get too excited yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to curb my.
Don't curb it, Taj. Be excited, man.
No.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you can overdo it. Well, you can't overhype this.
Well, it's coming up sooner than later. It's in November 21st is
so
the due date.
So November 21st, Taj is going to have his first child.
Yes.
Baby girl. And I'm going to have my first niece.
Yeah.
Which I'm very excited about. I have two nephews, but no nieces.
Oh, sure.
I know you guys have nieces, but
yes,
I don't.
That's very true.
So I get to experience that. But I'm excited. I'm happy for you, man.
Thank you. I'm super happy too.
Anything going on with the week? Anything that was worth mentioning?
Yeah,
besides,
I had a wonderful root canal.
Oh yeah. Well, how did that happen?
I don't know. Well, I do know now. it's funny because I was talking to my friend, and he was telling me about his tooth was hurting, and I had it in my mind that I'm going to the dentist and to the doctor after my birthday before we leave. And we were just talking and he's like, "I got to go in. It's hurting." Later that day, my tooth cracked. But they told me it's just clenching and grinding your teeth and
at night,
mostly stress.
Yeah,
but
that's odd.
That's basically
what
happened.
So you got a root canal. Yeah. How's your tooth feel now?
That Monday, so like 2 days later, because it was over the weekend.
How are you feeling now?
It didn't hurt actually. That well, when my tooth cracked, I didn't have any pain.
Okay.
So that was good. And then when I did the root canal, it was fine. It was okay.
So are you sleeping with a mouth guard now?
The last 2 days, yes. Ever since.
Let's see how long that goes.
Yes, let's see how long it goes. My tooth is not the tooth that I had the root canal. It's just in that area is sore.
Mm.
But I think it's because now I'm biting down on the mouth guard, but whatever.
Yeah. So now
we'll figure it out.
Not only do we have your birthday today, but we had Taj's birthday 4 days ago.
Yes, and
Taj, yeah, this doesn't really matter.
I want to definitely say thank you to there's a lot of messages that I received, and I read them all. I didn't get to respond. I started responding to them all, and then they got overwhelming, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
So I was like, I can't respond to all. I'll be here till next week. But I did read every single one of them, so thank you guys very much.
Cool.
A lot of sweet messages and
stuff. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We have a lot of supportive people out there. Yeah. So we
made the birthday bearable because I didn't do anything. I didn't want.
Yeah, you did.
What?
You helped me get to platinum.
Oh, yeah.
Todd and I play video games.
I took it easy. I didn't want to do anything elaborate for my birthday. So we played. Yeah.
You guys and your video games. Yeah. But
it was good. We got to get away.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. As long as it's a temporary getaway, not a full day.
I gave my brother a gift. Yeah.
All right. Well, without much further ado, am I saying that saying right? Without further ado or much?
No, without further ado.
Okay. Without further ado, we have a...
Without much ado. Is that you're combining two.
Okay, without further ado, we have a special guest today. He is here with us from a place called home. He is Jonathan Zeichner. Hey, I got a
nicely done.
A nicely done visual as well that I pronounced that right. But I'm just going to go by Jonathan, if that's okay.
That works.
Okay. And Jonathan has worked for 3 decades to improve and expand the lives of underserved, homeless, and mentally ill youth, families, veterans, incarcerated young men, and victims of violence. At APCH, a place called home, Zeichner heads up a dedicated staff providing programs and services in education, college, and vocational support, music, dance, visual performing, and digital art instruction, fitness, nutrition, gardening, counseling, and a comprehensive array of additional programs to support inner city youth ages 8 to mid-20s and their families.
Wow.
It's quite a bit.
That's a long list. It's amazing to actually be there and be in the middle of all that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I have to jump in real quick.
Yes, please.
Real quick, when you hear all of that read back, what comes to your mind?
Gratitude. You know, it's such a privilege to be able to do this kind of work, especially today with the world as it is, you know.
Yeah.
And it's great to be here with you all today and be in a place where people want to talk about that kind of work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not all the other stuff that's usually on the news and in the media. And it also feels kind of good because I have 3 brothers. So I'm really...
Any sisters?
I have no sisters.
Okay.
I'm grooving on being here with you all, talking about the birthday. And I have to confess that I didn't realize that your ongoing theme is about loss and grief.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And not to steer the show in a different direction, but this is actually the anniversary of a big loss in my life. So and usually in our culture, you know, there's no place for that.
Yeah.
You just got to keep moving doing your thing and going to work and putting on your persona.
Mm-hmm.
And this culture doesn't allow people to grieve and stop and commune with each other around that stuff. So I just want to appreciate.
Thank you, Jonathan. Jonathan, you have more wisdom and experience than us. And we've been doing the show for almost 2 years now. We can't figure out why. We understand, we always say this, our world is a world that celebrates winners. The NBA champions or any championship team, all the cameras go there. They're going to Disneyland. Everyone wants to see winning, but the losers kind of get left behind. And, you know, as we always say, you win and lose in life. There's a lot of loss that's going to happen in life, but we don't, as a society, kind of respect that. And we don't, so basically my question to you is, why do you think that's the case? Why don't we respect the loss and everything that goes with losing? Because to be honest, it's a really important part of being a full person, is handling
loss.
Why
don't we acknowledge it?
Why don't we acknowledge it? And why doesn't, as a society, what's your opinion?
You know, I feel like life is this journey of integration of all the different experiences and emotions and you know, art and everything that you are exposed to in your life, and shadow is a big part of it. And the fact is, people are very afraid of that for all kinds of reasons. I mean, I think the ultimate fear is death. And so that shadow looms over everything. And so when people see folks in the street who are homeless, it's frightening to them because they may be closer to that than they want to be, or they may have relatives who are. And so I think people tend to shy away from things that they don't understand. Death is a big mystery. And things that they're afraid of, which is losing what they have, what they've worked for. And, you know, sadness is a theme that continues throughout all of our lives. Happiness is something that seems to come and go in spurts. So there's those moments that you remember, I was happy then, or I feel happy now. But there are always things, if you're paying attention, to feel some pathos about, some sadness about. And that's not a bad thing, right? If we don't allow ourselves to go there and feel that, then we're not being whole people. It's unhealthy. That's why I'm really curious now to understand a little bit more about you all. And you probably have shared the story from beginning. But this theme of loss and grief, and the fact that three brothers, three adult men, are still getting together, spending time with each other, and there must be a great story to this, and I'm sorry that I don't know it all.
And I'll give you a Cliff Notes version. If, I don't know if people use that term anymore, Cliff Notes, but a real quick version is, we're three brothers that lost their mothers, that lost their mother at a young age, and we never did counseling. And what, almost two decades later, through the show, I think it's been our kind of source of counseling. You know, we've been able to talk about grief and loss and kind of get a better understanding it. You know, I think we are wrongly searching for a way to overcome that loss, but we've learned that there's no overcoming it. You just got to learn to deal with it and navigate through it. And I think that's helped, at least for me, it's helped me kind of approach life differently, you know? And
I think that, and also that there was three of us, and we grew up under the same roof with the same mom, but at the same time, we dealt with it differently, the loss. And there is no right or wrong way to deal with it. So acknowledging that as well. But there also, it didn't, when, at least for me, and I know for you guys as well, it's like when we lost our mom, there really wasn't an avenue where we could go to where we can learn about it. You know, it's, so that was another reason with for the DDJF, was so that you don't feel alone. You don't feel like this is only happening to me. You know, that's the worst feeling, is isolation, where you feel like this is only my problem and no one else can understand.
Sure, and there's the male thing too in our culture, you know, being a stoic about it.
You can't
cry. Sucking it all up
and
all that. And
that thing too.
Much respect to you gentlemen for doing this.
So I have to ask, before we get into A Place Called Home and exactly what you guys do, you co-founded and helmed the nationally acclaimed Inside Out Community Arts. So you've kind of always done stuff for community and stuff for others. Where did that come from? What was it in life that brought you to kind of, you know, help others?
Well, I think some of it just starts with how you're raised and the concept that you couldn't contribute to making the world a better place. So I think that was something that was on my mind. I really didn't know how to do it for a long time. But I have a brother. I mentioned earlier, right, I'm one of four boys. My oldest brother, Adam, has schizophrenia, and he's been on and off the streets for many, many, many years. And, you know, through the course of events, you know how family stuff goes. I became his liaison, you know, to the family. I became my brother's keeper starting at a very young age. And I've been in many, many different scenarios with him. Prisons, jails, psychiatric hospitals, out on the streets, you know, times when he was victimized, times when he was in a psychotic state. And that has informed my life in so many ways. And he's also somebody who I have loved and admired. He's a a genius musician and artist and poet, and a lot of times madness really dances mm-hmm. in the lives of people who have those talents. And when I came to Los Angeles in the late 80s to pursue, I thought, a career in acting and writing and directing, things that I did and loved, I'd spent a lot of time on theater. I'm a classically trained actor, and I'm a writer. And I came to L.A., and early on, I met somebody at an audition who told me about an organization that was doing theater work in psychiatric hospitals, prisons, and homeless shelters. And this light went off in my head, like, wow, I've been being prepared to do this work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I started working with this organization based at the UCLA Neuropsychiatric Institute and going into psychiatric hospitals all over the Southland, and, as I say, homeless shelters and prison settings. And within about 3 years, I ended up becoming the director of that organization. Mm-hmm. And I have to credit my brother because he's been the biggest teacher in my life. And so I was doing that. And then after the Rodney King verdicts happened and the uprisings in L.A., I was still relatively new to L.A., but I looked at what was happening and all the young people who were being swept into this wave of rage and anger and classism and race issues and all of these things that exist in L.A., which is a microcosm of the rest of the world. And I said, you know, I want to take this work that I've been doing with psychiatric patients, the most fragile members of our culture and society, and bring it into the inner city and into schools. Mm-hmm. Because for me, the arts were empowering. Mm-hmm. They gave me a sense of voice, mm-hmm. A sense of purpose, a sense of meaning that is not dependent on money mm-hmm. or violence.
That's great.
And so we started something called the School Project. We ended up with a friend of mine founding Inside Out Community Arts. Mm-hmm. And that organization went on to develop this program that went into inner city schools, but also connected schools from different neighborhoods, so crossing gang lines, crossing mm-hmm. socioeconomic and racial lines, to bring kids together who otherwise would not spend time together, and then also to bring their families to the culminating performances where the kids wrote plays about issues in their own lives and in their communities. So it was social intervention and social justice through the arts, and I found purpose. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things that I could never have predicted, I could never have planned. Mm-hmm. There was no way to train myself for it except through life, and then to find this thing where I could be useful. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you're talking about your mom. The one thing I remember that my mother always said to me is, make yourself useful. And so I feel like that is a blessing. When you find the thing that you're made to do and you can do it and you can somehow make a living, you know, mm-hmm. doing it, you're blessed.
That's right. That's great. One thing you said many great things, but the one thing I picked up on your respect and love and appreciation of your brother, I think that's amazing because I think I didn't have that situation. But I can assume many people would say, why me? Why, you know, why do I have to deal with it? Or why this? Where you came to see it as, you know, purpose. And you took on that role with pride. And I respect you for that. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you. I mean, you get older and you realize that the blessings and the challenges sometimes come hand in hand. Right?
Yes.
And you got to look at the challenge and find the blessing and the teaching and the gift in it.
One thing we do, the Dede Jackson Foundation, we do Music Heals, and we're musicians, and we believe in the power of music and arts. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the power of arts. What is it about art that you think helps people with you know, empowering them? What is it about art, do you think?
You know, Picasso said, we're all born artists, and the challenge is how to remain one, because the culture is constantly kind of trying to channel you into being productive, quote unquote, right, and participating in the consumer culture and all of those things. And but creativity and, you know, just the spirit of imagination mm-hmm. is something that I think all children are born with. And for me, that was my outlet. You know, that was the way I felt like I had any autonomy, any agency, was to be able to create mm-hmm. and then for people to appreciate what I created. That was a good feeling for me. And as I got older and ultimately started getting into theater, and this was during the time, I'm a little older than you guys, but this was towards the end of the Vietnam War, right? So this was in the mid-70s, early mid-70s. And I was going to this high school, and I had this drama teacher there who had been in the Peace Corps. She was kind of this lefty, you know, political, but very artistic person. And we were doing these plays, and the Vietnam War was winding down, but the Malay Massacre had just happened. And we were doing plays like Indians by Arthur Coppett, which was about the genocide of the Native American population here. And we were making the connection between that and what was happening in Vietnam. We did Lysistrata, which is an ancient Greek play about how the women withhold sex from the men until they stop fighting. And so we were making these political statements at that time in high school.
Wow.
And I realized that the arts were not just about entertainment. They were about truth with a capital T, and about reflecting back to people about humanity and living in the questions and the challenges and getting people to respond. And I remember in some of those performances, people getting up and yelling in the audience, right? Responding like, why are you doing this? And some people were like, right on. And some people were like, you know, you're not being patriotic. And so it was a place where people were confronting these deep issues in our culture. So that made a big impression on me, and I felt that, okay, this is something I need to do with my life. And ultimately, I pursued that along with many other things as a writer, a director, an actor, a not very great musician, but somebody who enjoys doing that in visual art. And through Inside Out Community Arts, we explored all of those disciplines. And now, at a place called Home, we have an incredibly robust commitment to the arts, to dance. We have a dance company and two dance studios. We have two bands. We have a recording studio. We teach 15 instruments and theory and composition. We have a digital media arts program. We have a theater program. We have a fine arts program. And all of these things, to answer your question, are vehicles for young people to find their inner voice and to validate it and to test it. And ultimately, that helps them develop their socialization and communication and conflict resolution skills. It addresses issues of diversity, cultural diversity, and all kinds of diversity. And it creates a place, a space for them to understand that their voice is important.
Yeah, yeah. So we've talked, danced around it a bit. Can you, for everyone listening, just give us the general, what is A Place Called Home?
A Place Called Home is an oasis in South Central LA. We're in our 25th year now of serving young people starting at 8 years old and going to their mid-20s, and also wrapping around families and providing services and opportunity and access to the community all around us in a lot of different ways. On a daily basis, what that looks like is between 300 and 400 young people come onto our campus, which is a 35,000 square foot campus at the corner of South Central and 29th. We have the littles and the middles on the east side of the street, and we have the teens and young adults on the west side of the street at a building that we call The Bridge, which also includes a performing arts center and a gallery. And we have a continuation high school called RISE at APCH, which is focused on serving the highest risk youth in our community. So those are young people who may be on probation coming out of juvenile justice, young people without stable homes, young people who are in the foster system, all very at risk or at opportunity, as we say these days. And along the way, starting 8, 10, 12 years old, whatever age they are when they come to A Place Called Home, we're working with them on developing their skills, their gifts, their values, their sense of responsibility for their own lives, and also for the community. So the ultimate goal whether they go to college on one of our scholarships. This fall, we'll have 100 young people in college on scholarships. Wow. Whether they get a good job, and by a good job, I mean a job that really capitalizes on what they care about mm-hmm. and what their gifts are and what their interests are, not just some job to have a job. That's the pathway at APCH, is all the way to higher education or a good job. And it's a remarkable place. We have about 650 young people enrolled, and we have about 650 on our waiting list. So we're also working to capacity and looking to grow. And we also wrap around the families and work with parents and grandparents and so on.
That is so great. Do you guys have any?
I do. I think you said 25 years?
Yeah, we're in our 25th year now.
That's amazing. Obviously, what you're doing is great, but I believe anything great, to get to that greatness, there's some kind of challenge. Could you tell us anything about any type of challenge or hurdle that you encountered, and how you overcame it?
Running a nonprofit of any type it has all kinds of very almost generic challenges, right? Mm-hmm. Resources mm-hmm. being the most important one. How do we raise the funds to do this? We have an annual budget of about $7 million. We have, 75 employees, most of them from the community. So part of what we're doing also is providing economic opportunity. Some of them are young people who've come back to APCH after mm-hmm. graduating. So finding the funds, and whether that's through foundations, very little from government fundraisers. We have a very robust board of directors mm-hmm. that really cares, but that's a constant grind. It's like a big hamster wheel, Yeah. And there are times, I must admit, that I think, if I didn't have to put so much energy into fundraising, what more could we be yeah. doing? How many more kids could we be yeah, serving? Right. How much further could mm-hmm. we take all of this? But it is part of the deal. And yeah. and I'm sure you've met with other folks who run nonprofits, mm-hmm. and they've said similar things. Yeah. So that's a huge challenge. I think we're facing the challenges that our constituents face as well. So we're living in a time where immigration rights mm-hmm. are a huge issue, and we feel that. Our staff runs on love, in addition to all the other mm-hmm. things, and we care about the families we work with. And so when they're fearful that they're going to be deported, or kids are fearful if they go home that their parents won't be there, we feel that, yeah. And we're constantly working with that. We have a mental health counseling center at a place called Home as well. And we also have community gardens, so we're out interacting with the community. We interact with the LAPD. I mean, we really are a hub in that community, and we are open to everybody, no matter who they are or where they come from. And so I think what I would focus on is the challenges that we share that our constituents face. Those are the challenges I'm most interested in, which is, how do you overcome generations of poverty? How do you overcome the fact that you're living in a food desert, and there's 50 liquor stores for every grocery store that has tired old produce in it, and the same things that are available in other parts of Los Angeles are not available to these kids? How do you overcome substandard schools or tension between community and police? Those are the things. Those are the kinds of challenges that we're focused on solving. Mm-hmm. The other challenges, like how do we pay the bills and open our doors every day? I don't know. I don't like to get bogged down by that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just see that as you're not entitled to anything in life. You got to work for it. And it's a message to the kids too, right? That none of this stuff comes free. Mm-hmm. And we tell them, don't come here just as consumers to get free stuff. Come here as partners to make change in your lives and in the community. And the bar is set pretty high for that, right? You got to learn, you got to develop your gifts, you got to figure out how to, when you're in conflict, not, slam the door and walk away, but stay in it get through it, right? So those are the kinds of challenges I'm most interested in.
I have one more question. 25 years, obviously things change, especially in our world today. It's changing quickly with social media and things. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen since year one?
Yeah, good question. Well, you know, a place called Home was founded by this really remarkable woman named Deborah Constance. And Deborah herself had grown up in an abusive household and really struggled with her demons, external and internal, and made some bad choices, had some addiction issues. But she discovered herself and her power when she opened a place called Home and started working with the youth in South Central. And she started the place partially, I think, to heal herself. And she'll say that. Mm-hmm. I needed a place to feel like I was useful and I could have home. And so she was responding to a very specific need at that time. The uprisings had happened, but there were also gang wars going on, mm-hmm. and kids of color were killing each other. And it was happening a lot. And she went in there and said, "This, you know, this will not stand." She created a place where kids were coming in, and in those days she was just dealing with teens from different gang affiliations. And she was sort of like, check your weapons at the door, no gang signs. Mm-hmm. This is a place of love. If you want love and safety, mm-hmm. this is your place. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. There are so rarely any fights at a place called Home. And so kids were coming in from different sets, and they were learning how to play and work together, and it was starting to have an effect out in the community. And that's when, you know, now we've worked with 20,000 young people. That starts changing things in the community. But the community itself has also changed, right? In those days, that area was primarily African American, and now it's primarily Latino. The issues themselves have not changed all that much. Poverty, crime, gang stuff, drugs, you know, all of those things. So a place called Home for many, many years, even as the population was shifting around us, we just kept opening our doors and saying, okay, you know, a lot of the kids and the families are facing the same issues. Mm-hmm. Well, now, as you probably well know, and you maybe even have done shows about this, we're starting to see gentrification coming into this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to happen overnight, but it is going to happen. Market forces will drive change mm-hmm. in this neighborhood. And so at a place called Home, we're paying attention to that. We're saying, what is our role as these changes start? Mm-hmm. And how can we empower our constituents to advocate for themselves and to sit at the table mm-hmm. with these conversations so that they're not just marginalized and you know, kicked down the road so that it can become, you know, Hipsterville. Mm-hmm. But how can we invite stakeholders, both current people who live and die and play and work in the neighborhood, with the new stakeholders that are coming, that are buying up property, that want to develop it, that want to quote-unquote improve things, and a lot of times it is really improving things, but how can we bring these stakeholders together to start seeing each other as human beings, not adversaries, and not just these monolithic kind of threats? But, hey, you know, what you want for your kids and what I want for my kids is basically the same thing.
Right.
We want safety. We want green space. We want opportunity. We want a decent education. We want a place where they can thrive and be healthy. Is there a way for us to help this neighborhood change in a different way than what some of the other neighborhoods we've seen have when gentrification came in and basically just cleared out all the low-income people? So that's a big issue mm-hmm. on our agenda right now and mm-hmm. in our strategic plan. And we probably don't have time to get into all the nuances of what we're doing to try to work on that. But it's a big learning curve, too, for all of us.
We're here with Jonathan Zeichner from A Place Called Home. If you want to learn more about A Place Called Home, make sure you go to apch.org. That's the website, apch.org. I'm very impressed. Mm-hmm. I'm happy you are here with us. Is A Place Called Home, is it after school? Is it through, just for anyone who's listening?
Yeah, good question. So during the school year, of course, we have the high school rise at APCH, and that starts at 8:30 in the morning, goes till 3:30 in the afternoon. Our after school program starts at about 1:32 in the afternoon and goes till about 6:37 in the evening. And the rise is a high school, but our after school program serves what we call the littles, the middles, and the teens, and parents as well. And then in the summer, we actually run from 8 in the morning until 7 in the evening, full on, right? Wow. And so we've got all ages on campus all day long. Plus, we do about 120 field trips a year. So we're taking kids sailing and hiking and fishing and horseback riding, you know, and to cultural events. So and we have a couple of kids overseas. We have kids doing volunteer work out in the community. And then we have internships. So through our vocational program, we're also placing dozens of young people in paid internships to learn about the workplace. And then we have this really incredible college preparation and scholarship program. We're constantly helping those young people that we're sending to college to make sure that they're prepared to go in and succeed.
That's so great. How does RISE, that's the name of the...
RISE, yeah.
Okay. How does RISE differ from your traditional high school?
Yeah. So, you know, for many years, we had a partnership with LAUSD, a continuation high school, and it really, it did a lot of great work. But just a few years ago, you know, I was talking with my board and staff and saying, I want to take it to another level. We need a more integrated partnership with that continuation high school that's going to be on our campus. Philosophically, spiritually, energetically, we really want a partner, not just a tenant, right? And so we started looking and talking to charters. We ended up meeting a number of really fantastic charters who were focused on, as we are, working with opportunity youth, kids who are facing a lot of adversity. And ultimately, we gravitated toward this charter operator called Da Vinci Schools, Da Vinci. And they told us that they were getting ready to start a brand new school, and it was going to be different even for them, because the primary focus would be, as I mentioned earlier, on foster youth, homeless youth, and youth on probation. And we were really excited about that because there's a desperate need in the community that we're serving, because those are the young people who are falling through the cracks. Yeah. The youth are the fastest growing part of the homeless population in LA are young people. The foster system, if you're reading the papers at all, you know that it's a very troubled system. And then obviously kids who get sucked into the juvenile justice system. Once you're in that system, it's very, very difficult to get out. And a lot of kids end up on these cycles that are very destructive. So we were excited to learn more about RISE. And we spent a good almost a year working with them because they were brand new. This gave us an opportunity to actually sit down with them and talk about integrated curriculum and programs. And what we've created there, and we just yesterday started year two, right? So we're only 1 year into this amazing experiment, it's just this remarkable partnership of very committed, passionate, inspired staff working with these kids who are coming. And the answer to your question, how is it different? First of all, every young person who walks in, and this year we'll probably enroll about 125, does an intake and is case managed. So whatever their needs are, we're wrapping around them. It's not just academic. It may be food. It may be a shower. It may be they need clothes and a toothbrush, or they need mental health support. They may need to be reconnected with their families. They may be pregnant. They may be using substances, you know, and we can help them get straight. So these kids are getting wraparound service when they come to this school, RISE. They're also getting outstanding academic support.
That's great.
And they have this pipeline, because once they get into RISE, they become a member of a place called Home. Now they have access to all of our programs, our music studio, our dance studio, our college prep, our vocation. So it's this integrated partnership that starts, you know, at 8:30 in the morning and goes till 6:37 in the evening.
It's great. You know, and you're giving them a sense, and like we started the show about, a sense of community. You know, they're feeling like they're belonging, because a lot of kids who are going through tough situations, that's what they're needing, you know, that sense of belonging. So great. I'm impressed.
Come visit.
I know. I have
you
to.
No, and because also I'd love for them to meet you guys and learn about what you're doing. And we actually had a little radio show at APCH for a couple of years. We used to produce it there, and it would air on KPCC.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really cool.
Real quick, where are you from? Originally.
You know, I'm originally from Connecticut. I grew up in New Haven, which was kind of a tough town. And I learned a lot of my life lessons there. When my parents divorced and my mom moved us into the inner city, and I was like I think I was the only Jewish kid in my middle school at all, and one of the few white kids in that school. And it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because I learned so many life lessons. The first one was how not to get my ass whooped. but ultimately, it was about that I'm not the dominant culture all the time, you know, and that was a huge life lesson for me. And going back to the arts, I learned that the way to connect with people when they come in from different spaces, or they think, you know, you're the enemy, is to find some music that you both love, you know, or dance or whatever it is. So, yeah, I'm from New Haven.
Cool. I coach baseball. I have two boys, 10 and 7. And I've been coaching for several years now. And I tell each of my teams the goal is at this age, it's not to win, it's to improve. So no matter what level you're at, whether you're a stud baseball player, whether you're just starting, I don't care about that. I want you to improve. If you can't hit the ball, I want you to hit the ball. I look at you as a teacher, as a coach as well. And my question is it's hard for me at the end of the season, because you get attached. You become family. And I'm teaching them how to hit baseball, but you are really like changing lives. You guys are, what you're doing, you're really changing lives and taking bad situations and giving opportunity. I want to know about the attachment. I want to know how you feel when you see them change and get on a better path.
Mm. Wow. That's a deep and beautiful question. And I'm glad you're doing that coaching. That's a great experience. The staff at a place called Home will blow your mind. You guys, when you come down and you meet them and they meet you, I can already tell it's kindred spirit. Mm-hmm. Of course we get attached. Mm-hmm. You know, our aim is to help every single young person who walks through that door. We don't want to lose a single one. Mm-hmm. And that looks a lot of different ways, because as you know, through your coaching, right, people move incrementally. Mm-hmm. Somebody moves a foot, somebody moves an inch. It's still movement. Yeah. And it's cliche, but we learn a lot more from our losses than we do from our wins. And what I see with these young people, and this actually connects back to another question you asked earlier about what's changed, is all this adversity that they're facing. You know, they're growing up in this zip code that wants to determine their destiny. Mm-hmm. And in this country, your zip code is one of the prime determinants of how your life is going to go. And the kids who grow up in 90011 are not supposed to succeed. They're supposed to end up in the system or working minimum wage jobs. You know, there's an old expression, the permanent underclass, which is disgusting, right? Mm-hmm. When I say it, my hackles go up. But these are kids who are survivors. Mm-hmm. The things that they face, the stories that we hear from them, the families that are living in their cars or where dad was deported or, you know, older brother was shot in a drive-by, all of these things. These kids have such strength. And if we can channel that and help them find a way to take whatever emotions they're feeling as they're facing all this stuff and focus it on doing something productive, then we're doing our job. And one of the things that's changed for me doing this work now close to 30 years used to be the kids that I was working with in South Central, they would say, I can't wait to get out of here. I can't wait to get a job, you know, or if they were on college path, you know, get my degree and get out of here. I'm not even going to look in the rearview mirror. Now it's the opposite. They all say, I can't wait to get a job. I can't wait to get my degree and come back here and make a difference and contribute. So that inspires me. And my attachment is gratified when I see young people who are finding their power and finding their gifts and their abundance to give back. So yes, it's sad to have kids walk away, but they come back, and more now they're coming back for jobs at a place called Home, which I love. Yeah. I absolutely love when I look and see young people who used to be members and now they're working. Or they're out in the community. They're counselors, they're teachers, they're law enforcement. You know, they're making a difference.
They're being productive.
home means so much to so many. It's a place where we feel safe, where we can be ourselves, where we could be with our friends, family, and loved ones. Most of all, home is where community comes together. Home is where the heart is. Is that your guys' saying? Because that's just beautiful. That sounds like a song. that's beautiful. I'm reading this from the notes. Okay, so question from you. If I'm, let's say, a 20-year-old, 25, 30-year-old young man, and I want to help those who need help. I want to help someone who's either dealing with an issue at home, who's a disadvantaged kid. What's the one thing you would say, what's the first thing you would say? I've noticed almost every kid that comes and needs help, this is the thing that they are lacking. What is that one thing?
Well, one thing I will say in response to that is I think people's stories are really important. They empower others. Mm-hmm. The story of you guys making this commitment, after, and it's been going for a couple of years, but your mom died 20 years ago. Yeah. And so really this has been going for 20 years. Mm-hmm. That story is something that people need to hear, and it's inspirational, and you finding a way to share it. And so I think for that young man you're describing who wants to get involved, or young woman, to come and tell your story. Find a way to connect with other young people who don't know yet who they are or how they're going to make it or what their life is going to look like. And they don't, in a lot of cases in this neighborhood, have really great examples, mm-hmm. because the adults in their lives may have not gotten an education, may not be working to make a decent living, may be incarcerated, may have encountered or perpetrated violence. A lot of these kids don't have that ideal role model in their lives. So if you want to help, first of all, that already tells me something about you. Come and get to know the kids. Chaperone a hike. Go to the beach with us. You know, tutor. If you play an instrument, come and help our music department. But use those as vehicles to get to know them and let them get to know you. That's what impresses them. And study after study shows us that sometimes one person can make all the difference. I bet if I asked you your life story, somewhere in there you'd say, and then there was this, mm-hmm. it was my uncle, or it was my teacher, or it was my friend, or it was my mom. And something they said to you, or the fact that you knew that they really believed in you, mm-hmm. and they wanted the best for you, it changed everything. It gave you the courage to do the things that you were afraid of. You know, Rumi has a great little couplet. He said, be afraid, but don't move the way fear makes you move. And that resonates for me, because as a man, and you guys may resonate with this too, you know, we're taught, well, don't be afraid, don't show fear, all this stuff. And I've learned that that's not real. Mm-hmm. It's not real that you're not afraid. What can be real is that you can acknowledge that you do have fears, but they're not going to dictate your life. Mm-hmm. They're not going to put you in reaction. You're going to make intentional choices about what you do.
That's powerful stuff. Yeah. Jonathan Zeichner with A Place Called Home. Again, www.apch.org. We are only a couple minutes shy of closing the show, Jonathan. But what we like to do is give our guest a minute. Was it usually 30 seconds?
Yeah, I'm stretching it a little bit.
I'm stretching it for you, Jonathan, because you're so empowering and you're so knowledgeable. I'm giving you a minute. Basically, what we like to do is our guests to have a minute and say whatever it is, whatever you want to share, whatever you want to talk about, if it's
you're
a program.
You're talking to the listeners.
You're talking to the listeners. No question. Preemptive question, whatever you want to get out to Los Angeles and to the world, really.
Yeah.
Share it.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of and generous of you. Look, I'm a lifelong student, so I don't claim to know anything, but I will give an invitation to your listeners to find a way to be useful, because that is going to enrich you. If you're feeling depressed, if you're feeling powerless, if you're feeling overwhelmed by the news of the day, find a way to make a difference in somebody else's life. You can do that at A Place Called Home. We'd love to have you come down. We welcome a couple thousand volunteers a year. But you can do it a lot of other places too. And nonprofit organizations are holding our culture together, such as it is, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways that people don't realize. They think that government services are doing this and that. No, it's private people mm-hmm. who decided they wanted to make a difference and that they were going to devote their lives and not necessarily make a whole lot of money, mm-hmm. but do something that gives back. And so I invite you to find your own joy and your own power by finding a way to make a difference.
Perfectly said, wow. Jonathan. And thank you so much for joining us. So many great nuggets and information. A Place Called Home, Jonathan Zeichner, www.apch.org. If you want to learn more about A Place Called Home and you're always on Instagram at APCH2830. Again, Jonathan, on behalf of my brothers, thank you for joining us.
Yes.
Thanks for sharing your story and what you guys do at A Place Called Home. It's been great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A pleasure to be with you all.
Thank you. Thank you. Anything else you guys want to say before I close out?
That was good.
August 10th is 2 years we've been doing this.
In two days?
We found out,
For the radio show.
For the radio show.
The foundation's been long.
100th episode is next week.
Ah, so Jonathan, Todd, why didn't you schedule him for the next week so he could have been the 100th? All good. Well, that's our show. If you found our program helpful and can afford to do so, please go to ddjf.org mm-hmm. or apch.org and support our causes. Any donation amount would help. And if you don't have the financial means to do so, you can always volunteer. It does take a village. And the one thing we always like to say, and I think Jonathan hit on quite a bit today, is by giving back, you also find some empowering within yourself. Yeah. So it'll be an experience that you'll be proud of and can take with you. And there's nothing like making positive change in the world. So I encourage everyone to do something. As Jonathan said, if you're not in LA and it's not APCH and it's not the D.D. Jackson Foundation, find something, a cause that resonates with you and make the change. Right?
Yeah.
Anything else, fellas?
Good.
All right. We'll see you everyone next week, Wednesday, 1 p.m. Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Adios.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.